I'm not pulling in my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work at home edition. So I like to use my time at home mostly to do interviews. So today I have Jadeen Klumperens, who was the play design lead for Laurel and Eclipsed. So we're going to talk all about balancing Laurel and Eclipsed. Hello.
Hello. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so real quickly, for the people that aren't aware, let's explain play design. When you get a set, what is it your job to do? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so we are the final stage of the set. We work on it from the end of set design, more or less, to when it goes out the door. And our job is refinement and balancing. The sets and the cards make a lot of promises to players. Like, hey, you can play this stuff together. You can play Elementals together. You can play Kithkin together, whatever it might be. And play design's job is to make sure that that is true, that you have the right number of cards on the curve to make it work and that everything plays nicely together. So we kind of smooth out the cards that are there, make some small changes to make everything play together. And then, of course, we are focused on balance, and we do all of this for both Constructed and Limited.
Okay, so let's start with Limited, because I think the set had a lot of challenges with Limited. So one of the most intriguing things of the set, something we've never done before, so I want to walk through how it happened, is there are, in fact, 10 draft archetypes, like normal, all two-color pairs, but they're not equally weighted, meaning that certain pairs are drafted more than others. Can you walk through how we got there and how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, Laurel and Eclipsed tried to do a new structure that was incredibly ambitious and weird. And I say tried because it's not super clear how well we succeeded. But the idea was that we have these typal color pairs coming from the Lorwyn half that we think are going to be the most accessible and the most exciting for the most players. People are going to want to draft Elves and Goblins more than they are going to want to draft the more shadow, more-y, blight stuff, etc. It's just kind of easier to get into. And it's also more of what we want the set to be about. We wanted the set to have more of that typal feeling and to have a lot of the excitement of the set coming from, hey, you get to play your favorite Lorwyn creature types. So our goal at the onset of play design work was to construct the format such that two-thirds to three-fourths of drafters ended up in the five typal archetypes for the set, and that the remaining one-third to one-fourth played the weirder stuff. We wanted that stuff to be supported. We wanted it to be there. We wanted it to add to depth and replayability of the set, but we didn't want it to be the main focus, and we wanted to make sure that when two people at a pod sat down to play Elves, they both had a good time, and it wasn't like you can only support one Elf player at the pod. As often when we are trying to do something for the first time, it is not clear it's going to go well, and it's really hard. So by the numbers, I think we hit a little bit over of three-quarters drafters on Arena playing the five typal archetypes. And the balance was definitely not quite where we wanted it to be, where those archetypes are clearly stronger than the other five, which means it's mostly wrong to end up drafting them if you are trying to win. So we missed a little bit, but it was a really interesting experiment.
So another facet that's really interesting is that the five typal archetypes are not all the allies or all the enemies, but in fact, it's a mix. So real quickly for the audience, white, blue is Kithkin. White, blue is Merfolk. Green, white is Kithkin. Black, red is Goblins. Blue, red is Elementals. And black, green is Elves. So talk a little bit about that. That's also something we don't do very often.
Yeah, my most interesting tidbit there is that we did the Shocklands between Edge of Eternities and Lorwyn Eclipsed, and the distribution was decided by the Lorwyn Eclipsed typal archetypes. Each of those got the Shockland in the set, which means the Edge of Eternity Shocklands, which came out first, looked a little bizarre and had no good explanation until you get to Edge of Eternities. I always enjoyed that. But yeah, So basically, we got there off of choosing the type that we thought players would want the most. Lorwyn has a lot of creature types that you could support, but elves, goblins, and merfolk are the big three. Classic fantasy creature types, the most exciting. Players love them. There are all sorts of commander decks. Kithkin, iconically Lorwyn, just something that we don't get to do a lot and we wanted to support. Rounded out with elementals because we need five, and elementals are also fairly popular. And then we chose the color pairs in such a way that you get to the full colors represented correctly amount of times, but we wanted to more be true to how we have represented the types in the past than fit into a clear allied or enemy distinction, which is how you get into this just kind of weird hodgepodge where we connect all of them in a circle in a way that we don't normally do.
So just to explain to the audience what you are talking about is, we made sure that each color was represented twice between the five archetypes. And the thing was, because we were trying to do Lorwyn, what Lorwyn did, Lorwyn kind of predates a lot of the modern sort of draft archetypes and the way we do it now. And so we just put things in different colors because we thought it was flavorful. Elves were black-green because we thought it was cool. Like, one of the weirder things at the time was the elves were the one people that went from being meaner to nicer in Shadowmoor, for example. They went from green-black to green-white. And so anyway, so let's walk through the five. I just want to walk through each of them and talk about what you did to sort of balance that archetype. So we'll start with white-blue with merfolk. How'd you guys balance merfolk?
So the merfolk in the set are about tapping and untapping. A fun little nod, we tried to maintain while working on the set that was really hard because it gets art-dependent, is that the Lorwyn half of the merfolk tap things. They have the convoke cards. They have things that have input tap. The Shadowmoor half of the merfolk have when this becomes tap triggers. So they're kind of playing in the same space differently on the two different halves of the plane. And when it works, it's great. It was very challenging to pull off in any meaningful way because sometimes you want to flip the cards back and forth after we have art. Balancing the merfolk was mostly about balancing, I need to go wide so that I can cast my convoke spells, so that I can have a wide board, but also not having too much snowbally and introducing some of the trickiness from blue and trying to get the right amount of flash play.
Another thing that's interesting to point out is when we do archetypes, we want to have some of them be fast, some be kind of medium, and some be slow. So there's a mix. Where did this one, where did merfolk fall?
Medium towards the fast side. I think it is probably was intended to be kind of the second fastest deck. It's aggressive. Kithkin and merfolk would be the most aggressive things you can do. Share the white core. And the white blue merfolk deck is a little bit bigger and a little bit more relying on interaction than sheer creature aggro.
Okay, you mentioned Kithkin, so why don't we go to Kithkin? So Kithkin's green white. Yeah. How did you balance Kithkin?
So one of the core challenges of every typo set is, hey, we have five typo themes. If we did our job in one way, they could all play very similarly. Put a bunch of the type on the board, grow them, kill your opponent. We never do that because it's not that interesting an experience. So instead, we say the merfolk deck care about tapping and untapping. The elves care about the graveyard a little bit, and we differentiate how the different types play. But that always means one type gets to be the straightforward, make a lot of guys, grow them. And Kithkin got to do that in this set. So the Kithkin strategy is very simple. Just make a lot of Kithkin, grow them, and attack your opponent down. It gets to leverage green, big creatures, outsize them. Kithkin, the biggest balance challenge was about just not too much snowballing, basically. It's really easy for those decks to get ahead early and stay ahead. So trying to kind of environmentally make sure the rest of the format has the appropriate tools to catch up and that the best Kithkin starts aren't overwhelming.
Okay, so let's move on to goblins. Black, red. What do you have to do for goblins?
So goblins was one of the harder ones to work on because it was trying to play with the blight mechanic. And the blight mechanic was intense. It's very engine buildy. It's like, okay, I'm going to assemble my guys who can blight. I'm going to assemble some guys who benefit from losing counters. The goblins were veering a little bit away because they were more about just kill your guys. It's fine. The goblins are in the trash. You get a benefit from it. But they can incorporate some of, like, the tree folk in the set that care about having counters placed on them so they can remove them. So balancing the goblins was a lot more about figuring out the strongest card interactions and kind of balancing around more of the combo nature.
Yeah, one of the things you bring up, which is really interesting, is minus one counters have been, like, play design in the past has not been very fond of minus one counters. It makes it very grindy. Like, one of the things I always say is that you want the game, you want the inertia of the game to make it end, and minus one counters often don't do that. So we want to talk a little bit about what we did differently this time to make minus one counters more help the game end rather than just sort of keep things from progressing.
Right. So basically we put a lot of synergy behind it. We said, all right, here is this blight mechanic, and we got to make a lot of cards that we don't get to make in the shape normally, in the shape of I can grow, but I can only grow a limited number of times, which is actually a really nice card shape for play design. So basically what I'm talking about is in most sets with plus one counters, you can make a card that says, hey, when I attack, put a plus one counter on me. That's a fine card. It can grow out of control. It's kind of got some balance challenges if it runs away with the game. With minus one counters, we get to make a card that says, I enter with three minus one counters. When I attack, remove one of them, which means you're on this quest to do something, but you can only do it a finite number of times, and then you end up with the max size of your creature, which lets us cap how far you can go in a very understandable and clean way for players. And that lets us unlock a whole bunch of new card shapes that are actually really good for play design. So I think this is the first time play design in, like, the last while has had a chance to explore minus one counters and think of the ways we can use them that are aligned with how we want games to go. I think we've discovered a lot of cool stuff. So that kind of tapped growth was one of them. And the other big one was just putting a lot of power in the synergy and kind of making it more engine-y. So instead of nobody has any power on the board because there's so many minus one counters and the game goes on forever, we instead are in a world where I'm doing minus one counters mostly to my stuff. I'm using them to be very proactive. I get to turn those minus one counters into stats, into card advantage, and then the game progresses.
Yeah, another interesting point that when normally in previous times we've used minus one counters, it's been more an aggressive thing. I'm using it to shrink the opponent. But what Blight does, which is really interesting, is, like, sacrifice creature is an interesting mechanic, but a whole creature is a lot. And so it allows you to sort of sacrifice parts of a creature, which I think was really interesting from a balance perspective.
Yeah, Blight was one of my favorite mechanics in a while. It just let us make a lot of different cards, and not just different because they have the mechanic, but, like, the shapes feel different. It flips a lot of the normal dynamics. It makes you care about different numbers on cards in a new way. Like, often in games of Magic, the difference between a two toughness creature and a one toughness creature isn't that big a deal unless your opponent has some things that deal one damage. But if I have a bunch of Blight 1 cards in my deck, all of a sudden it's a huge difference if my creature is toughness 2 or toughness 1, which is, you know, play design is always looking for ways to make you care about different parts of the card a different amount than you did before. And Blight was a great tool for that.
Okay, next we're going to go to Elementals, blue-red.
Yeah, so Elementals, I'll talk about Constructed a little bit for the first time. We executed on all of these themes for Standard and for Limited. Elementals is the one strange caveat where the set was also going to have this cycle of Mythic Elementals, which we just saw a lot of at the Pro Tour and have gone really well for us. But the fact that we are doing these elementals kind of influenced how we had to approach the cards for Constructed, because we didn't want strong typal elemental cards that we might make to constrain this cycle of elementals. We felt that we wanted them to be really cool, and also, frankly, that they didn't need much help, which proved out to be true. At the Pro Tour, we saw all sorts of elementals deck with just, like, the very small amount of real estate we gave them. Thunderflock, kind of the highlight there. So the Elementals deck then, the limited archetype was the most divorced from what it was doing in Constructed, where the standard packages for the other four types was very just coming out of what they were doing in limited. We made a Kithkin aggro package for standard. There's cards that plays very similarly in limited. Elementals, because we weren't going to blow its limited themes out for Constructed in quite the same way, was more of a blank slate. So it ended up being the least straightforward, I would say, of the five typal archetypes, the most likely to incorporate vivid stuff in limited. A lot of the vivid payoff creatures were elementals, so you could kind of naturally splash them. It got to play with a bunch of like trigger stuff. The signpost uncommon doubles elemental triggers, and it's kind of a elemental combo thing. I actually remember, like, kind of midway through set design, my favorite draft I have ever done internally was an elementals draft where I just was doing some of the most wild stuff I have ever done. Just so cool getting to assemble just really powerful triggers, copying them, and doing pretty cool stuff.
Okay, so the final of the typo archetypes is elves in black-green. Yeah, real quickly, a little behind the scenes before we get to the play design part of it.
Yeah.
When we did our vision design, we first did our run through. I think we made an allied color. Like, originally we had, like, allied color, and we didn't have elves. Because elves have to be black-green. That's just so iconic to Lorwyn. And then at some point we're like, okay, we have to do elves. And that's how we got to the the ally and enemy mix. So, okay, how did you balance elves?
So elves got to play in the graveyard, which means they were kind of working with goblins. You get that like sacrifice / graveyard through line in black that plays really nicely and helps us make some bridge cards, which can be really challenging to make for a typal set trying to make cards that'll play well in either of the archetypes of the color. Elves were fairly straightforward for us, mostly about getting the right amount of graveyard enabling and payoff. Ended up being one of the stronger decks in the format.
Okay, so that's the five typal archetypes. So now let's get into the five non-typal archetypes. And I'll start with the first one that I'll say is a little bit of typal archetype, which is blue-black. So let's talk about blue-black. And also, when we bring it up, fairies is really interesting in that we didn't go full out on fairies, but fairies is an element of what's going on blue-black. So how did you balance that?
Right, so the idea behind blue-black was that it was going to be fairies, kind of in, like, 10-point font and flash in 14-point font, if you will. Just it's got fairies backing it up, but it is predominantly a flash-based deck. Main challenges there, and the reasons to do this, is if you make a fairies deck, it becomes a flying-typal deck, and flying-typal decks are kind of notoriously hard for us, not that fun. Either your opponent is blocking all your stuff, you're not doing anything, or you are running away with the game with no interaction. So we always try and make sure that it's a little bit not quite that.
Okay, so the next two I want to talk about is the next two archetypes are kind of there's connectivity between them. So there's the two vivid archetypes and the two, I don't know, minus one archetypes, what I refer to. But let's start with the vivid. So red, green, and green, blue both tie into vivid in different ways.
Yeah, so vivid was a really weird one to work on. So vivid, if you just read what the cards say, control permanence of different colors, you go, cool, I'm playing a five-color deck. That's not really what we wanted you to do. The set doesn't have common dual lands. It has only two land cyclers. We were trying to very intentionally not let Vivid be just a clean play five colors. There's some of that. If you're really heavily based green, you can play, there's a two mana creature that adds mana of any color. There's really good mana fixing in green, but it's very hard to play a super multicolor deck that isn't base green. But the idea with Vivid was not force you to play all the colors of mana and instead get your bonuses off of hybrid things, that you would fill your deck with a bunch of cards that you can get a white permanent on the board with only black mana with the black-white hybrid card and stuff like that, and also changing the cards so that even if you only have three on the field, the vivid reward is still very good. So there's definitely some blending between the vivid archetypes. It was going to be hard to separate cleanly any deck that into two color pairs that so badly wants to play multiple colors. So it's not like the vivid decks mostly are like one deck. You're just kind of green and vivid and splash, and they kind of blend together a bit.
Okay, so the other two archetypes. Oh, before we get to the last two archetypes, something you brought up, I just wanted to question about. working with hybrid. Hybrid is something we've been doing more and more with Unlimited. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of the what hybrid does for a limited environment?
So hybrid is interesting in that it's often thought of as like another form of two color cards, but in terms of limited, it is much closer to a half color card when you do single pip, which means it is a great tool for cards that let you bridge and stay flexible in the draft, which is something Lorwyn Eclipse as a predominantly typo set really needed. So we have this cycle of hybrids, changelings at common that were really intended with, hey, these are cards you can take that will probably make your deck even if you have to shift lanes. They're like surprisingly close to being colorless cards in terms of how open you can be with them, which is just a really powerful tool for limited. And of course, hybrid is very flexible. We can also make hybrid cards that are very pip intensive that then function as two color cards, basically, or monocolor cards, but you can't really splash one triple H cards into a deck that is not both of those colors.
Okay, so let's get into the final two archetypes, which is white black and red white. So talk about, so I mean, they're their own archetypes, but they're definitely, they have some connection to them. So let's walk through them.
Yeah, they definitely blend a bit as well. We thought of them as blight engine was kind of the words we used internally, just the idea that you would be assembling a bunch of creatures that blight, assembling a bunch of ways to take the counters off, and it would be kind of this very grindy, engine-y gameplay where you put creatures on board, put counters on them, took counters off them, kind of went up and down the chain a little bit there. They were really fun internally, definitely challenging to balance, kind of like how much mana are we charging you to blight, what are the strongest ways to blight, what are the strongest enablers. It's its own ecosystem in a lot of ways. That you have to figure out what's the best inputs, what are the best outputs.
And how does white, black, and red, white differ? I mean, obviously they blend some.
Yeah, white, red was intended to be more aggressive. A lot of its outputs were size or like your creatures can't block or my creatures gain flying. And black, white was more grindy. It's like recur my stuff, keep going. In practice, it definitely goes into you play Mardu a lot and play all three of the colors. But yeah, that was the idea.
Okay, so we've spent, so the 10 archetypes mostly are a little more limited focused than they are constructed focused. So let's talk a little bit about what exactly, what did you prepare for Lorwyn as a constructed shot? Real quickly for the audience, we don't definitively know what will or won't happen. We just can say, here are ideas, maybe it'll take off, maybe it won't. We could do percentages and things. But if we design something that we 100% know how it'll work, you guys figure it out in 2 seconds. So what were the different things that you prepared that maybe would be relevant for Constructed?
So we think of this in two ways. Like, first, we want the set to have interesting standard cards. We want cards to matter. We don't want players to see a bunch of cards from Lorwyn Eclipse that are cool, but nothing that speaks to them in standard or nothing that ends up being strong enough for standard. So we definitely want content. And then the other thing we think about is, if you are a player who loves Lorwyn Eclipse, what is the standard deck from Lorwyn Eclipse that you're going to want to play in standard? So we go, okay, I think there's going to be people who really like elves who want to play the elf cards. We need to make sure that it's possible for them. So these decks don't always end up incredibly strong, but we want to make sure they're functional, something that you could take to FNM and have a good time. And sometimes they will hit higher than that. For instance, there are some pretty Lorwyn-focused Elementals deck that did very well at the Pro Tour that we set up for them. And has a lot of cool, innovative deck buildings. There's a lot of ways you can do it, a lot of connection to past sets. But it was important that we make sure that there are the tools in the set to get you to go down that path and explore what there is to offer. So the main things for Constructed in the set, we worked on all of the main creature types, except for elementals, as just like several rares aimed at them, clean typo strategies, play in. They've all got to, well, not all of them, but elves and goblins got to hook into some of the foundations cards, which was really cool because we set up some elf typal and goblin typal cards in Foundation. And yeah, just trying to get those decks to make sense. You have enough cards. You're not like, wow, I would really want to play element. I would really want to play elves, but there's not enough two drops. Just kind of make sure all the gaps are plugged. And then we did the Mythic Elementals, which we wanted to be individual cool cards, variety of strategies, support different two-color decks that aren't supported by the main creature types. A small handful of open-ended elemental typal cards that might tie into them and see where that goes. And then, of course, just kind of strong individual cards like Formidable Speaker and just content like that.
Okay, Formidable Speaker.
That is the World Championship card.
Yeah, so it is a 2 and a green for a 2/4 elf druid. It's a creature. When this creature enters, you may discard a card. If you do, search your library for a creature card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle. And one tap, you can untap another target permanent.
Yep.
And this was the World Championship card.
Yep,
so.
Yeah, yeah. It's always fun to work on. We work pretty closely with the world champion to tell us what kind of card they want and figure it out. And generally want them to be able to show up, and this one definitely did. But yeah, a blend of cool individual cards, packages, get them all to work nicely and be well supported.
So one of the things you've talked about, there's a cycle of elementals that bring back a mechanic from original Lorwyn, which was Evoke. What was the like balancing Evoke?
So yeah, Evoke is one of those really interesting mechanics to work on that is famously strong. There have been a lot of strong Evoke cards and also kind of famously exploitative, especially the Modern Horizons 2 elementals. We've seen all sorts of just very powerful things you can do in interactions, like evoke my card and blink it in response and get to keep my big creature and get its ETB twice. So making new Evoke cards is really tough because we need to find the right balance of this is powerful. We are not betraying your expectations on that this mechanic is strong and that it kind of lives up to the previous things that were going on. But also, for Standard, we don't super want the gameplay to be turn one, play my elemental, blink it, have this huge creature and kind of crush what's going on for my opponent. So getting all the pieces to blend together nicely was hard. The set design team came up with this, frankly, genius structure of the hybrid Evoke cost and then different effects so that when you pay the full mana cost of the card, you get two effects. When you play it cheaper on the curve, you get one effect. Worked super well. We patched out the blink stuff a little bit by writing, if you cast it on the card. Well, sorry, getting confusing myself in design parlance. Because it cares about the mana spent, you don't actually get any rewards if you blink it. So you just get the creature, which is a lot easier for us to balance around. And it's been really cool to see. They worked out incredibly well. They're showing up in Standard. People are still doing some of the blink or not dead after all stuff to get the creatures in play, but it's at a much more appropriate for Standard rate. Took a ton of effort from the team. We spent so much time on those cards, but I'm really happy with where they landed.
Okay, we're almost done here. So is there any other elements that you were really proud of just individual things you did for Lorwyn Eclipse?
The main thing, the other thing that we haven't talked about is expanding on choose a creature type cards a little bit. Lorwyn did like a mega cycle of stuff. It's like, hey, you're a typo player, but these aren't the types for you. You kind of want to have that type of fun, but you're not super into the Lorwyn type. We did this cycle of cards that is just kind of, hey, choose your creature type. And I think that stuff is really cool content. It's not necessarily great in Standard, but I think it is a really nice way to make sure that all typo players are having a good time when we do a typo set.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Jadine. This was very fun. And I hope the audience learned a lot about the inner workings of trying to balance a Magic set.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So everybody else, I'm at my desk. So we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking Magic, it's time for me to be making Magic. So I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.